Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, you must do something about Irma.
Is this about her sock full of boogers? Because I'm working on it.
Ugh. No, it isn't. But now it seems like it should be. She's teething again.
Oh, no. Not another 6 years of sleepless days, temper tantrums, and screaming fits.
Irma doesn't do any of that. She just spits her poisonous little barbs all over the house.
I meant screaming fits for us.
Oh, right. Everyone, just file into the reading room in a timely manner, please. Ms. Merrick will be right behind you before you know it. I didn't mean for that to sound as ominous as it did. Please find your favorite spots and stay there.
Oh, my stars. I am so sorry to be tardy, my dear guests. We have one or several issues to be dealt with behind the scenes this evening. So I was just instructing a few housemaids on their specific duties and safety procedures to follow in order to clean and clear away anything that might be a concern to anyone, which I will get to. But please, let's see to your comfort first. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but many of the settees, lounge chairs, and sofas here in the reading room have rising footrests. There's generally a little button or lever along the side that, when pressed or activated, ushers the appearance of these comfy little footrests. There are also ottomans, chaise lounges, and window seats for you to pull your feet up and rest them upon. And this evening, and possibly a little ways into the future, I recommend that you take full advantage of these convenient elevating comforts. Yes. Well, I'm getting to why, Mr. Dunphy. No, it's not weird at all, I assure you. I just need to explain. I'm just a little embarrassed to tell you this, my guests. But there is a slight danger I am compelled to make you aware of this evening. I have a secret admirer who has been sending armloads of rare roses, having them delivered here to the library for me. And these roses are imported from Romania. Somehow this person knows that they're my favorite. Anyway, the thorns that fall from the fine roses' stems are toxic. And they're littered all around the library. They're little and greenish-brown and insanely sharp. And they can not only pierce any surface, they have disastrous effects when they puncture, perforate, or penetrate human skin, the pain of which is likened to having one's limbs severed. Then a kind of torturous delirium sets in which the victim digs at their own eyes and tongue in an attempt to halt their vile visions and to stop the brain-splitting screams of their own voices. So, it's sad. And these symptoms sometimes subside. but in any case, I'm sure you'll be careful. Miss Zetta. You can't smell any roses. Oh, can't you? Oh, dear. You may want to see a human doctor about that. What a shame. Their aroma is quite intoxicating. Oh, just one more thing, my lovelies. If Irma attempts to coax you into playing sock puppets with her, for Cersei's sake, say no. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my beloved guest. I am your toothsome MC, Miranda Merrick. Let me jump right to the treats on the hospitality tray, since we're already immersed in our evening. Just to give credit where credit is due, both Mr. Darling and Natasha have seen to it that you have the sweetest treats, all with their roots in folklore and fairy tales to select from this evening. They went together to Grimm's Grocers to collect many of the scarce ingredients, and Mr. Darling alone braved our bee boxes to harvest the fresh honey from our unique bees. He wears a suit of triple-thick netting, which is just a sight to see. Anyway, we have rich-tasting gingerbread men, who look a little more like fairies, which is fine, since fairies are known to basically exist on sweets. There's exotic Turkish delight that will definitely sweeten your mood. The harvested honey has gone into Natasha's version of ambrosia. That's all I know, and all I'm permitted to disclose to you about it. I do know that you will need to consume the ambrosia with the little tarnished silver spoons that are provided. And I will warn you, do not attempt to polish the tarnish away from the little spoons, or you'll spoil the the flavor of the ambrosia. Please watch for the thorns as you traverse the floor. Tonight's reading is on the much neglected, creepy subject of teeth. Teeth from every sort of being, including you, are the most durable part of any body. The hardest substance in the human body is not bone. It is tooth enamel. Yet, unlike bone, it cannot repair itself because it is not living tissue. It's more dead-like. Long after your bones are dust or even consumed in a fire, it is your teeth that stubbornly remain, bearing witness to your existence. That's why they have to be crushed or even pulverized to achieve full obliteration. The oldest known surviving human teeth have been found buried in the earth in Ethiopia and are just shy of 3 million years old. Teeth, since time infinitum, have been the source of legend, superstition, and folklore, and the care and loss of them is storied and strange. Teeth have long been believed to contain a presence and power, their appearance having meaning and portents, both in reality and in dreams. Teeth, I have read, and might even believe, can be used in magic, curses, and witchcraft. If you are ever plagued by dreams in which your teeth are falling out, well, you may want to seek out a doctor or a counselor or a gifted seer for the continuation of your life. Just a little advice. Now, I know, my lovelies, that many of you are super sensitive about your teeth, and it's an off-putting subject for some, but not me. So, I thought we would ease into the topic by bringing to light a bit of fun tooth lore from thousands and thousands of years ago in ancient Sumeria, where as far back as 5000 BCE, if your teeth were bad, well, it was just a given fact that you had tooth worms. These were said to be tiny, hungry worms that dwelt beneath the soft gums of people and burrowed and munched their way into the hard roots of your teeth, where they chewed upon the nerves and drank away the nourishing blood, collapsing the tooth from the inside out. Proclamations of tooth worms were carved into Babylonian clay tablets and even immortalized in poetry at the time. A book we have, titled Fang and Fortune, contains this primitive and cringeworthy poem, which I will try my best to recite for you. After Anu had created the heavens, heaven had created the earth. The earth had created the rivers. The rivers had created the canals. The canals created the marsh. And the marsh created the worm. The worm went weeping before Shamash, with his tears flowing before Ea. What wilt thou give me for my food? What wilt thou give me for my sucking? I shall give thee the ripe fig and the apricot. Of what use are they to me, the ripe fig and the apricot? Lift me up, and among the teeth and the gums, cause me to dwell. The blood of the tooth I will suck, and the gum I will gnaw at its roots. That's what the poem says. As you can hear, past times poetry made an impression, to say the least. But what might be the most impressive fact is that the belief in tooth worms continued forward for thousands of years, right up to, well, only a few hundred years ago. This belief was also essentially somewhat of a global phenomenon, with writings about the gnawing little wigglers being found in China, Europe, Japan, and many other places. But not to worry, those suffering from an infestation of tooth worms in these bygone times were often treated by incantations. And the curious habit of smoking the worms out. This bizarre treatment was done by filling the person's mouth with the smoke from a burning mixture of beeswax and henbane seeds, which you will not be surprised to learn did not work. I know that you're sad to move on from toothworms, my dear guest, but we have much to learn about teeth from the guiding light of folklore and superstition. So we'll move just a bit from worms to demons. It seems to some cultures, like the Sumerians, the tooth worms were basically a demonic force anyway. And some ancients did believe that tiny demons dwelt within the casement of human teeth. And not just demons, but some paintings, carvings of teeth made from ivory, and detailed wood carvings or block prints displayed within the teeth, minuscule evil demons, snakes, vile spirits, and even the ghosts of the dead. But if you had the uncontrolled compulsion of bruxism or tooth grinding, you were thought to be under the influence of a demon who drove you to this destructive nighttime behavior. Luckily, there was a cure. Your physician, or just as easily, any wild man who lived in a hollowed-out tree, because I imagine they had the same level of expertise, would have you sleep with a human skull next to your face, right on your pillow with you. The presence of the grinning skull was believed to scare the demon away, or at least to keep him at bay. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by Grimm's Grocers. Grimm's knows you're busy, that's a fact. All in a tizzy, you've made a pact. You're a witch in a rush, quick to spell. There's souls to crush and sin to hell. Park right up front and dash right in, if what you want is a second-hand grin. Grimm's has teeth from every head, swiped very discreet from the newly dead. There's fang of fox and molar of shrew, teeth in a box marked Uncle Lou. Bargain teeth, all chipped and busted. Designer teeth, get a gold bicuspid. Teeth from the east with strange enamel, plucked from a beast, or maybe a camel. Teeth for spells and teeth for rites. Grimm's has barrels of pearly whites. On special this week at Grimm's, show your Midnight Library card and receive a free exam by their backroom dentist, Dr. Squeak. Grimm's Grocers is not associated with Dr. Squeak and is not responsible for any pain, numbness, dizziness, blood loss, hyperextended jaws, torn lips, or lost tongues. Grimm's Grocers, on the corner of Vincent and Price.
Children. Children.
Excuse me. I am so sorry. Children, specifically children's teeth, have always been a peculiar source of radical beliefs among many cultures. And if you don't know, both sets, the baby teeth and the larger permanent teeth, are nearly all formed when a baby is born, and then they come in later, one set after the other, at the appropriate time, generally. A child's skull, say in an X-ray, will show at a very young age nearly all of its giant adult teeth, filling its entire face in a monstrous fashion. The adult canines and molars lying in wait, embedded high up in the facial bones, only a few centimeters beneath the eye sockets, just waiting to force out the little teeth. And there is a rare phenomenon where a baby is born with some teeth already protruding from their tiny jaws. These early chompers were and are referred to as natal teeth, and the folklore beliefs about a baby born with them was varied. In the past, in India, Africa, and China, natal teeth were seen as a bad omen, or a sign that some misfortune was coming, or even that one of the babe's parents had some demonic aspect about them. While in Europe and in the early Roman culture, these early teeth found in a newborn's mouth were a sure sign of a successful future for the child, and a sure predictor that they would become strong and powerful adults, and perhaps to become leaders or seers or a sage. Shakespeare also had something to say on this marked occurrence when he waxed poetically about his character, Richard III, declaring, "Teeth hadst thou in thy head when thou wast born, to signify thou camest to bite the world." Nice. In any case, it is a given fact that Cardinal Richelieu, Zoroaster, Hannibal, King Louis XIV, Richard III, and Napoleon were all born, already baring their teeth. I do have some more biting tellings regarding the teeth of children that I'm saving for you in just a little while. But just now, I have a collection of dark and strange facts about teeth that I'm compelled to treat you to. Let's start pleasant. There were cute beliefs during the Renaissance period that a gap in a woman's teeth meant a shortened life, and that any man who endeavored to plant corn should have impeccably straight teeth himself, as this would guarantee his corn would grow with neat, straight rows of kernels. The ancient Maya believed that one's teeth presented an opportunity to display or improve or make impressions with their appearance by enhancing their front teeth. They would drill or dig little divots into each other's teeth with sharpened sticks or pointed rocks, and then affix with tree resin polished and glittering stones of quartz, garnets, and amethyst. And in a strange move that would seem like madness to most today, in 19th century Japan, they began the odd practice of dyeing their teeth black. This beauty standard custom, called ohagaru, was achieved by consuming a specially prepared drink called Kanamizu. This potent drink was a sinister mixture of tea or sake, vinegar, and last but not least, exceedingly fine iron filings. Those determined to turn their pearly whites into pitch black beauties drank this drink once each day until the desired shade of black was achieved. And once the teeth had turned the new charcoal color, it was permanent. But the teeth of the dead. Now, there's a different mood about those. Long ago, it was believed that if you carried with you the tooth of a dead man, that it would protect you, the living, from toothaches. And if you could get your hands on the tooth, or teeth, of a hanged man, well, these previously owned pearly whites were thought to be powerful talismen, protecting you from the harm or ill will of others. Carrying or even wearing the ill-fated person's teeth was said to bring the bearer good fortune and favor in business and gambling. There was also, at one time, the opportunity for some to actually wear the so-called dead man's grin, also called the Waterloo smile or Waterloo teeth. This macabre practice took place after the Battle of Waterloo and the American Civil War. Scads of roving scavengers would roam the body-littered battlefields with pliers and ice picks in their hands. They then pried and pulled thousands of teeth from the newly dead, or hopefully dead, soldiers, looting the skulls and filling their pockets and pouches full with the pulled white teeth. These stolen bloody teeth fetched a pretty penny at many a town dentist's office and abroad. The recycling of teeth was said to be so popular at this time that literal barrels were filled with dead soldiers' teeth and shipped out to dentists in other ports. The teeth were cleaned up, supposedly boiled, and set into wooden and ivory gums for wealthy persons to wear, smile, and eat with. The teeth of humans, but delightfully animals, have always been filled with lore. For no specific reason, I will courteously tell you about wolf's teeth first. Found fangs of any kind, but especially wolf fangs, have been believed to be powerful things. Stone Age peoples kept wolf teeth as protective amulets, probably believing they imbued them with the strength of the wolf and kept the evils of illness and enemies at bay. In Tibetan culture, the tooth of a wolf had the power to keep wicked spirits away. In medieval France, children were given a pendant, a gold-mounted wolf's fang, to wear to protect them and to prevent seizures. The tooth of a wolf, just a regular wolf, could bring its owner the gifts of courage, stealthiness, and tenacity. And for the Norse tribes, wolf teeth carried the spirit of the animal and imparted wisdom and gave them spiritual guidance. But the teeth or tooth of a magical or shape-shifting wolf, however. Well, I don't suppose you'll find one of those anytime soon, but I'll just say that if you have to be bitten by a wolf, this magical sort would be preferred, for certain. Bear teeth were certainly kept and venerated by Native American tribes, and often worn by their leaders or chieftains to protect, strengthen, and make them courageous. Bear's teeth were even believed to ward off other bears should the wearer encounter them. Aboriginal peoples and people of the Pacific and Asia certainly believed in the potent energy that came directly from wild boar teeth and tusks, wearing them in a dynamic way about their necks and extravagant headpieces. The tusks not only giving the wearer might, but also being a status symbol, showing and reminding everyone of their high-ranking status. Even beaver teeth had valuable abilities to some North American tribes. The ever-growing teeth of the large rodent were kept and worn for its spirit of endurance, and they were often worn by those who were talented woodcrafters. And I have one more short story about deer, which of course were revered and sacred to all tribal people for being the embodiment of nature spirits. But this rather bizarre story that was printed in the Village Voice, a reprint from the bygone era of the 1960s, is about a man from British Columbia, an independent woodsman, Francis Wharton, who was the true rugged mountain man type. Mr. Wharton, who strived to make use of everything he took from nature, bagged himself a deer. He then fashioned for himself a set of upper dentures that he made from the filed down teeth from the deer. Then he consumed the cooked and prepared meat from the deer, which he, let's say, dined upon with the deer's own teeth. I guess we can say that being very true to his dedication, he wasn't wasteful, and we cannot say that he wasn't thorough in his ways, that Mr. Wharton. My. Now, there is, of course, and please don't spread this around the village, much lore about the use of teeth
by witches.
There was a time, not now, I'm sure though, that many people used to believe that one of the worst fates that could befall you or your children was to have your teeth to fall into the hands of a witch. Because she can not only use your teeth in paralyzing and puppet mastering spells, but she can, supposedly control your fate or your children's fate, turning your luck and health this way then that, if she felt that you had slighted her. Say, by talking about her and spreading lying rumors about her in, say, a village somewhere. If she were to, hold your tooth over a fire, you might come down with a burning fever that no common doctor could ever hope to cure. And if she buried your tooth in pine sawdust from a certain forest, or better yet, kept it in a pretty little jar of the driest sand, the most bitter salt, and just a pinch of the ashes used to burn a grandmother of hers. I would have to hazard a guess. But I'll bet you would then be overtaken by the most torturous, unquenchable thirst there ever was. Your once pink wet tongue lying shriveled, brown and crisp in the gully of your jaw, rattling against the dry sockets of your continually shattering teeth. But anyway, in the olden days, to try to prevent this sort of ghastly thing happening, which totally didn't happen, probably, the common people did all kinds of creative things to attempt to stop their teeth and the teeth of their children from falling into the talented hands of witches. Adults whose teeth either fell out or were pulled kept their teeth safe by burying them, hiding them, or even sewing them into the lining of their curtains or whatever. And the fun thing about children's teeth is that they just randomly and reliably fall out. And this really kept the parents on their toes and the witches ever watchful and hopeful, not far behind. Worried parents even went so far as to toss their children's fallen out baby teeth up onto their roofs, which was dumb because witches could just fly right up there and get them. I've read. And they also, and this is off the charts goofy, they would feed their children's teeth to animals. Seriously, they left the baby's tooth right outside of a mouse hole in the wall, or fed them to a badger or a fox or something. Hello! Witches are friends with all of those animals. Anyway, I guess the slow humans finally figured out that these things weren't working, and they made friends themselves with the Tooth Fairy, who apparently had bags and bags of unwanted money and a real desire for baby teeth for some reason. In any case, I'm sure no self-respecting fairy would ever just give those teeth to witches, aren't you? No, I want to thank you so much for being here. And thank you for helping the Midnight Library by not talking about it too much in the village. And I know you are drawn to Mr. Darling's toothy grin. So please follow him out of the reading room And, be careful of those dangerous little thorns as you walk. Good night.
So, I'm to follow the guests, but not eat any of them, correct?
Yes. I need you to pick up their teeth that will be falling out.
I believe there's a flaw in your plan, madam. I am a magical wolf, but I cannot pick up anything with my wolf paws.
Oh, well, I guess you'll just have to take Irma with you.
Are you trying to trick me into babysitting?
Fine, you may eat two guests.
And?
And? No baths for a month.
Yippee!
My lovelies, I am so pleased to tell you about our friends at My Victorian Nightmare. If you consider yourself an enthusiast of creepy Victorian history, you probably already know about the Age of Spiritualism, the grisly murders, the body snatchers. But My Victorian Nightmare digs a little bit deeper. Your hostess, Genevieve Mannion, doesn't just give history lessons about the darkest corners of the 19th century. She takes you there, down the cobblestone streets of Whitechapel, through the eerie midnight cemeteries. Have they really found Jack the Ripper? What's the most haunted house in America? Did folks really believe in vampires in the 19th century? With a maniacal surgeon's precision and a little dose of humor, Genevieve deep dives into every mysterious, macabre, and fascinating facet of the Victorian era, meticulously separating fact from fiction. So, if you find yourself intrigued by horror and mayhem from the 19th century, join Genevieve every Monday for My Victorian Nightmare, wherever you find your spooky podcasts. This message is for you, my dear guest. It's important to me that you know that you are welcome and valued here. Why? Because I know that you are a real person. And I'd like you to know that in spite of what you may hear in the village, that I am a real person too. I am not an AI-generated thing, pieced together by robbing the work of others and presented by a soulless algorithm, meant to spew a random flood of content at you that only masquerades as quality entertainment. I choose the subjects I think you'll like. I diligently research the topics using only reputable books and sites. I alone write every single word you hear. I choose each piece of music and every eerie fun sound. I am the Midnight Library. I am the Reading Room. I am every character. I am the Broom and Fang Pub, the fog that floats in the graveyard, and every Lady Gravedigger. And I am honored that you enjoy what I create. So I will ask you to support the Midnight Library, as many of my beloved friends do. Please visit patreon.com/midnight.com. library, and I'll meet you there. Thank you.